When We Were Small, written by Delicious Blizzard Shark, read by CC Rambles. This is a Mortal Zusher Gen Pod and is rated T. Lan Zushan knew he wasn't going to be a good parent from the very beginning. He hadn't been a very good uncle. He was too stiff around Ahuan, afraid to hold him, nervously giving him back as soon as he could. The presents he gave were too utilitarian or inappropriately aged. He valued him, and then them, in the abstract, but he was always relieved when the visit or holiday or whatever was over, and he could go home to the quiet and solitude of his apartment. His tiny minimalist apartment, his fine china cups, his collection of first editions, his delicate, finicky orchids. And then the call came, and he had no time or space for grief. There were two small boys being shepherded into his apartment by a woman with a platinum perm and stud earrings shaped like cat faces. "Uncle?" Ahuan had said and bowed. The woman's face flickered from false smile to pinched disapproval and backed. Ajahn, who had always been an unusually quiet child, didn't even look up, only held his older brother's hand in what must have been a punishing grip. There was no time or space for grief or anything. He takes the children to buy black suits. He leaves them behind in the apartment, 12-year-old Ahuan assuring him he's old enough to be left alone with his brother, to go to their house and oversee it being packed up, the furniture sold, the personal effects of his brother and his wife put into storage. There's no room for decisions or education. Only him sitting at his table with two children, eating in silence. Only hearing Ahuan whispering to his brother in the middle of the night. Only the three of them all tangled up together with grief and confusion and pain. And the certainty that he isn't, that he won't be a good parent. Time slips past. Lan Zushan buys a new apartment, big enough for the children to have their own rooms, buys them beds and bookshelves and desks. There isn't enough space for all of his orchids, and he sells the ones he can't keep, sighs to himself as he watches them being taken away. It's stupid to cry over orchids, stupid to miss the quiet Saturday afternoons spent checking their soil and misting their leaves, repositioning the lights and the filters over the lights. Children are supposed to be plastic, supposed to bounce back from the hardest things. Lan Zushan has never felt that way about himself, has always known he walks around with too many wounds that should have healed long ago, and he's afraid that Ajahn's too much like him. Ahuan comes home from school with perfect grades and happy stories about projects and classmates and something funny Joel Thompson said during lunch. But Ajahn has to be talked into going to school every day. He has to be talked into wearing his school uniform, has to be talked into putting on his backpack, has to be talked into getting into Lan Tishan's car. And Ahuan has to do it all, because every time Lan Tishan tries, he gets it wrong. It's wrong to put so much on the shoulders of a 12-year-old, Lan Tishan knows, but he doesn't know what else to do. Ahuan bounces back like rubber, but Ajahn flattens like clay, squishes on the floor he's been dropped onto, splatters against it. A month passes, and then another, and then another, and teachers call concerned, and doctors suggest things Lan Tishan can't bear to think about, and he still cries himself to sleep, still asks when his parents are coming to get him, when he speaks at all. And Lan Tishan tries to be honest, and Lan Tishan tries to be patient, and Lan Tishan tries to be kind, but he's not a good parent. The girl comes late at night. Not a girl, maybe, she's in her late 20s or her early 30s, but she has sparkling nail polish on her fingers, sparkly clips in her hair. She has a perm too, a thick mass of black hair, and when he tries to speak to her in Mandarin, she shakes her head and says, in a Midwest accent, "Sorry, I only speak English." She's carrying a child in her arms, about Arjan's age, dressed in a battered puffy red coat over a pair of worn dinosaur pajamas, a duffel bag slung on her shoulder. It's 9 o'clock at night, and even though the child had their face pressed into the girl's neck, Lan Tishan doesn't think he has ever seen either of them before. "Have you come to the right place?" he asks. "You're Mr. Lam?" she asks, pronouncing it the American way. He nods and steps aside so she can carry the child into the apartment. "I'm a babysitter. I was hired a few days ago to take care of him at the hotel." She looks around and then deposits the sleeping child on the couch without asking, placing the duffel bag beside it. "They were only supposed to be gone a day. I'm sorry, but I have to go. I'm already late." "Wait," Lan Tishan says. "Who are they? Who is he?" "Oh," the girl says. "I thought you would know. Well, you were their emergency contact. The agency always requires a local one for just this kind of situation. He's a good kid. I'm sorry." "Who are they?" Lan Tishan asks again. "Oh," the girl says again. She rubs her face as if she's exhausted. "Yeah, I've got the..." She unzips the duffel bag and slides a folder from it. "Here's all the information I have," she says, giving it to him. He opens the folder, sees a form someone has filled out in untidy Roman letters, the names written out in the English manner. Name, Ying Wei. Parents, Cheng Su Li, Charlie Wei. For a moment, he thinks maybe this is another prank Li Cheng-se is playing on him, somehow an extension of the time she'd stolen and replaced all the keys on his keyring, the time she'd somehow managed to dye his scraggly teenage beard blue. But he hasn't seen her for 20 years, and this is a child. Li Cheng-se is a lot, but she wouldn't play a prank with a child. "I'm sorry," the girl says. "I have to go." And before he can say anything to stop her, she's gone. Well, he's had children suddenly brought to his door by women with perms before, in more trying circumstances too. The death of his brother is nothing more than a low ache in his gut now. He bends over the small child, slips his ragged sneakers off, removes the puffy coat from his arms, and tucks a couch cushion under his cheek. He hopes he doesn't wet himself in his sleep, the way Arjan still sometimes does. It would be a lot more difficult to clean the couch than it was the bed with the waterproof mattress cover. The child makes a small noise, and Lan Tishan tucks a blanket around him, then takes himself to bed. When morning comes and he has gotten up and washed and dressed, Arjan is already in the living room. He often gets up early, usually occupies himself with reading, or pretending to read, Lan Tishan honestly isn't entirely sure which. But instead of sitting on the couch in his weirdly proper manner, he's kneeling in front of the couch staring at the sleepy boy. "Uncle," he whispers, and Lan Tishan starts. Arjan hasn't spoken, as far as Lan Tishan knows, in weeks. "Who is this?"
"His name is Wei Ying," Lan Tishan says.
"Oh,"
Arjan says, looking back at the sleeping boy.
"I like his pajamas."
"Do you want dinosaur pajamas?" Lan Tishan asks, surprised. Arjan rarely expresses any preferences.
"Where are his parents?"
Arjan asks.
"I don't know,"
Lan Tishan says.
"Oh,"
Arjan says again.
"It's okay to be sad,"
he tells the sleeping boy. He stands up and runs to his room, then reappears with his favorite stuffed animal, the bunny he carries with him everywhere, and carefully tucks it under the sleeping boy's arm. When it seems like it's probably not too early, Lan Tishan calls his lawyer and explains the situation, and the lawyer tells him she'll see what she can do. Ah Huan comes in, rubbing sleep from his eyes, and stops and stares at the sleeping boy.
"He's my friend," Arjan says.
He's still sitting next to the couch, but now he's reading one of his books out loud to the sleeping boy. Lan Tishan is pretty sure at this point that he isn't actually reading, because he seems to be making up the words from what he can remember and the pictures. It's only when the boy, Ah Ying, reaches out a hand to point to something in the book that Lan Tishan realizes he's awake.
"Do you know where they went?"
Lan Tishan asks. Ah Ying shakes his head.
"I was friends with your mother in school,"
Lan Xishan says. This is a bit of a stretch, but it seems like he should say something. Arjan finishes reading the book while Ahuan makes breakfast, because Arjan will only eat food his brother has made, and then they all sit around the table, Ah Ying still in his dinosaur pajamas, hair sticking up all over the place, clambering up into the seat Arjan shows him to.
Who are you?
Ah Ying asks Lan Tijin and Ahuan.
This is uncle and brother,
Arjan says. Ahuan is staring at him. This is more words than Lan Tijin has probably heard Arjan speak in their whole time living together.
Oh, the boy says, smiling at them shyly. I'm Ah Ying. Do you know where Julie is?
Julie is the babysitter, Lan Tijin assumes. She brought you here last night, he says. She said she had to go somewhere. Ah Ying nods like he expected this.
My parents are still gone, he says.
No talking while eating,
Arjan scolds them, and Lan Tijin stares at him, surprised, wondering where he's picked up this rule from. They don't usually speak during meals, but Lan Tijin hadn't thought much of it. They hadn't spoken much in general.
Wei Ying pokes at the porridge. Do you have cereal? He asks.
I'm sorry, we don't, Lan Tijin says.
Do you want me to put sugar on it?
Ahuan asks.
Or honey?
Wei Ying nods and Lan Tijin says nothing as he watches Ahuan spoon a disturbing amount of sugar into the porridge until the boy seems satisfied.
I want sugar too,
Arjan decides and they all stare at him, except Wei Ying, who is now shoveling his mostly sugar porridge into his mouth. Arjan has insisted on eating exactly the same food for breakfast, lunch and dinner since he arrived at Lan Tijin's house.
Okay, Ahuan says, and puts a very small spoon of sugar in his porridge.
Arjan looks at Wei Ying's bowl and pouts.
Why don't you try it before you decide if you want more?
Ahuan encourages, and Arjan nods and carefully watches as his brother stirs the porridge and then tastes it delicately. Then he looks at Wei Ying and says,
We both have sugar.
And Wei Ying grins back, and Lan Tijin finds himself exchanging a confused look with a 12-year-old.
Ah Ying is coming to school with me, Arjan decides after breakfast.
Ah Ying can't go to school with you,
Lan Tijin tries gently.
He's not enrolled. Only children who are enrolled can go to school.
We can enroll him, Arjan insists. In that way children have of just rolling with words whose meaning they don't know. Lan Tijin opens his mouth to argue, but remembers that sometimes in his own childhood, children had brought friends with them to school, so he calls the school office and asks if Arjan can bring a friend with him. It takes some doing, and the confession that Lan Tijin doesn't know where Ah Ying's parents are, and that it's possible that they're missing or dead, and that he just wants to keep things as normal as possible. But finally they agree, and Arjan lends Ah Ying his spare school shirt, and Ahuan finds an old backpack for him and packs him a lunch, and Arjan is excited to go to school for the first time since his parents died. It takes 3 weeks. The lawyer hires a private detective, who discovers that Wei Changze used to be employed by the Tian Corporation. 3 weeks in which Arjan smiles 3 times and tries 4 new foods and does 12 things he refused to do before Ah Ying showed up at their doorstep. At night, Ah Ying sleeps in Arjan's bed and they curl around each other like kittens, and during the day, Arjan watches everything Ah Ying does with big eyes. Ah Ying is full of energy and doesn't seem overly bothered by not knowing where his parents are. Lan Tijin wonders how many times they've left him like this, with strangers or near strangers. It takes 3 weeks for the investigators to find the bodies of Ah Ying's parents, where they'd fallen together off the edge of a cliff, for Tian Fengmian to appear, a copy of Wei Changzi's will in hand. Lan Tijin remembers Tian Fengmian from school too.
One of those kids who always went along with what the popular kids wanted. But he's probably a better parent than Lan Tijun is.
He should stay here, he wants to protest, when Tian Fengmian tells him, jovially, that he's come to take Wei Ying off his hands. He and Arjun care so much about each other, he wants to say. He's a bundle of light and energy.
But Tian Fengmian is probably a better parent than Lan Tijun is, and he has the law on his side.
They pack up Wei Ying's things. Ah Huan tries to make it a game, picking clothes out of the laundry and asking if they're Ah Zhan's or Ah Ying's. Ah Ying laughs and says ridiculous things like, they're bunnies, and they're uncles. But Ah Zhan pouts and grabs Ah Ying's duffel bag and runs into the bathroom and locks the door and refuses to come out. Ah Huan is trying to cajole him out of the bathroom while Lan Tijun tries to calm down Ah Ying, who is clutching the stuffed rabbit and crying so hard all his words are garbled, when Tian Fengmian and his wife, Yu Ziyuan, knock on the door, their two small children in tow.
My, my, my,
Tian Fengmian says with a chuckle as Lan Tijun lets them into the house as if two heartbroken toddlers are just silly children. The Tian's youngest child, a boy about the same age as Ah Ying and Ah Zhan, walks up to Ah Ying and squats down, staring at where he's rolling on the floor.
Why sad? He asks the Tian's older child, a quiet girl around Ah Huan's age.
Ah Ying just lost his parents, the girl says, taking her brother's hands.
Ah Ying sits up and sniffs and rubs his nose.
No, he says.
No?
The girl repeats, confused.
I'm sad because I'm leaving, the boy says.
Oh, the girl says, sitting down beside him and frowning.
Don't you want to come and stay with me in Archung? We have lots of toys and we got a bunk bed so you can sleep in Archung's room. It will be really fun.
Yan Li, don't sit on the floor, Otsu Yan says. Lan Tijun suddenly remembers he's never liked her. She's always been too harsh and unyielding. He remembers there used to be rumors of her making a game out of making other girls cry. Her daughter obediently stands up and smooths down her skirt.
Is he ready to go? Utsu Yuan asks, as if she's asking about a takeout order.
Oh, there's a problem, Lan Tijun admits. My nephew has locked himself in the bathroom with Ai Ying's things.
Utsu Yuan sniffs and stands.
Well, that won't be a problem, she says. He can just wear Ah Chung's things until I have time to take him shopping.
Oh, Lan Tijun says. I can ship his things to you.
No need, Utsu Yuan says. We can afford to buy him clothes. Come on, Fengmian.
Ah Ying is still sitting doubtfully on the floor, looking up at them.
I'm not going, he declares, clutching the bunny even tighter. But he's too small to be a match for adults.
Tian Fengmian just scoops him up into his arms and holds him tightly as he struggles.
No! Ai Ying cries. No, Ah Zhan!
In the hallway, there's a loud bump as Ah Zhan tries to push the bathroom door open and it slams into Ah Huan. He scrambles through the narrow opening anyway, runs into the living room, and without thinking, Lan Tijun catches him.
Ai Ying!
Ah Zhan shouts, struggling against Lan Tijun's grip.
Ah Zhan!
Ah Ying shouts back, but they're both too small to fight.
Lan Tijun sinks to his knees with his sobbing nephew in his arms until he cries himself to sleep.
It's like they've all moved back in time to right after the accident, except Lan Tijun feels hopeless and guilty, though he doesn't know what he could have done. Anything, his heart tells him, literally anything, he hadn't tried at all. A week in, a week of Ah Huan trying all his tricks to get Ah Zhan out of bed, to dress, to eat, to go to school. A week of strain and worry, and Ah Zhan just sitting on the couch, staring at nothing, crying silently. Lan Tijun gives in and calls Tian Fengmian.
How is Ah Ying doing? He asks his old classmate.
He's doing fine, Tian Fengmian replies. It's an adjustment, but you know kids, they bounce back like rubber.
Tian Fengmian is just as he remembers him, someone who never gave anyone the consideration they deserved.
I'm worried about Arjun, Lan Tishan says. He's really upset about Ah Ying leaving. I thought maybe we could arrange to meet up. Maybe if he knows he can see Ah Ying from time to time, he won't be so upset. He did lose his parents so recently.
Tian Fengmian is silent for a long moment. Then he says,
Ah Ying is just beginning to settle in. I don't want to disrupt that. I think if they saw each other, they would just go back to square one.
Like he's talking about addiction, not love. Lan Tishan grits his teeth, but what can he do? Tian Fengmian is Wei Ying's guardian now. Tian Fengmian says the same thing about every one of Lan Tishan's suggestions, phone calls, letters, and Lan Tishan hangs up, seething, frustrated. He turns to see Arjun's curious eyes on him.
I'm sorry, he tells the child, because he doesn't know how to lie.
Ah Ying is doing fine, but we can't go to see him. And for the first time, Arjun comes up to him and wraps his arms around him. Lan Tishan finds himself grateful for even this small blessing. Autumn comes, and then winter. Ah Huan suddenly grows 2 inches, and they go clothes shopping and come home with clothes that make Ah Huan look like a teenager and a white puffy jacket that makes Arjun look like a round marshmallow. Arjun has begun obsessively cleaning his room, getting up too early and vacuuming his floor over and over again, folding and refolding his clothes because the edges aren't straight enough. Lan Tishan takes them both to a family counselor, and Arjun refuses to talk, just sits in the room and stares down at his small hands. Arjun only eats food he remembers Wei Ying liking. He eats peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, chicken nuggets, hot oil noodles, porridge with too much sugar. It's a relief, because at least he's eating. And then, one evening, there's a phone call. Ah Huan gets it, because most of the phone calls are for him. Hello? Ah Huan says, then holds out the phone. Lan Tishan pulls himself up. He's getting so old. But Ah Huan shakes his head. Arjun, he says, it's Ah Ying. And Lan Tishan sees hope and happiness light Arjun's face for the first time in months, and relief floods him. Later, Ah Huan tells him that Ah Ying convinced Tianyan Li to find their phone number for him and to lend him her phone. Lan Tishan knows he shouldn't be letting a 5-year-old call his house without his guardians knowing, but he can't bring himself to do anything about it. Arjun talks. Not a lot, but then he never spoke a lot, not even to Ah Ying. He makes little noises to let Ah Ying know he's listening, gives one-word answers, giggles. Then, finally, he says,
okay,
and holds the phone out to Ah Huan.
Tianyan Li wants to talk to you, he says,
and Lan Tishan listens with amazement as a pair of tweens make arrangements for their little brothers to call each other on a daily basis without Ah Ying's guardians finding out. Before he hangs up, Ah Huan tells Tianyan Li their address and his school email just in case they can't call, and he writes down Tianyan Li's information as well. He hands the little scrap of paper to Arjun and says, you won't lose him again. Lan Tishan never knew children could break your heart. They call as often as Tianyan Li can manage. Lan Tishan wonders about this, about the kind of family that has taught such a young child, she's 11 or 12, he thinks, to keep such a secret. If Ah Ying says anything about it, no one will pay him any mind. He's only 6, the right age to have imaginary conversations with imaginary friends. But how is Yan Li hiding the phone logs, the amount of time Ah Ying spends on the phone? Or do their parents just pay so little attention to them? Ah Ying's calls make a world of difference to Arjun. He begins speaking to his therapist enough for her to diagnose him with autism, to send him to special support instructors. With time, he loosens up a little, starts letting Lan Tishan take over some of the things Ah Huan had been in charge of, tries new foods,
lets his schedule deviate a little now and then. Lan Tijun has nightmares that the Tians will find out and they'll lose Ah Ying again. Instead, about a year after Ah Ying spent those few weeks with them, Tian Fengmian calls.
I guess you were right, he tells Lan Tijun in his jolly voice. Ah Ying is always talking about Ah Zhan and keeps begging to be able to see him. He asked for it for his birthday. How could I say no?
So they make plans to meet halfway between their respective cities in an indoor children's museum. The moment the boys catch sight of each other, they're running towards each other, grabbing onto each other like they'll never let go. Tian Fengmian smiles at Lan Tijun.
Well, old man, he says, I guess we're going to be in-laws.
They're six, Lan Tijun does not say, and I'm not an old man. He's only a year older than Tian Fengmian, for all that Tian Fengmian dresses like he's still in his 20s. Instead, he turns and greets Yan Li, who is already speaking quietly to Ah Huan.
Thought it would be better not to bring Ah Chang, Tian Fengmian says a little while later, as they watch the boys run from exhibit to exhibit,
Ah Ying dragging Ah Zhan along behind him.
He gets jealous when Ah Ying talks too much about Ah Zhan, he chuckles.
Lan Tijun hates him a little. Instead, when Tian Fengmian goes to the bathroom, he gives Yan Li a prepaid credit card he'd won in one of those stupid work raffles. You keep this safe for if Ah Ying ever needs anything, he tells her, and she takes it and nods, too serious, too responsible for her age. You call me, he says, if you ever need help. This isn't something he should do, he knows, giving money to other people's children, asking them to keep secrets. But leaving Ah Ying entirely to Tian Fengmian and his wife seems worse. Yes, uncle, she says, smiling up at him. When Lan Tijun can see that Tian Fengmian is beginning to grow bored, he suggests that Ah Ying come and stay with them a weekend every month. I'll pick him up, Lan Tijun adds quickly. It won't be a burden on you at all.
I'm surprised you want such a wild kid to stay with you, Tian Fengmian says with a chuckle. He's always getting into mischief.
Ah Zhan and Ah Huan got very attached to him when he stayed with us, Lan Tijun says, leaving out the fact that he'd gotten attached as well. Ah Zhan has trouble making friends. Ah Ying is good for him. Tian Fengmian nods.
I'll have to check with Su Yuan, he says, but I'm sure she'll be happy to be rid of him a few days a month.
Lan Tijun represses the urge to punch him. When it's time to go, the boys start crying again, latching onto each other tightly, even with the promise that they'll see each other in less than a month, their older siblings doing their best to pry them apart, like oyster shuckers trying to open a shell. Finally, they get them separated and drag them to their separate cars. Ah Zhan limp in Lan Tijun's arms, like he thinks if he plays dead for long enough, he'll get to stay with Ah Ying. Lan Tijun buys bunk beds for Ah Zhan's room, talks to Ah Zhan about what they're going to do while Ah Ying is there, and Ah Zhan recites all of Ah Ying's favourite things, swimming, playing cars, colouring, eating ice cream, playing in the park, going ice skating. It's going to be November, Ah Huan says patiently. Too cold for swimming and ice cream and the park, but not too cold for ice skating. November is stupid, Ah Zhan complains, and Ah Huan laughs. Ah Ying is waiting on the Tian's steps when they get there, Yan Li sitting beside him and holding his hand, which is good because he tries to run to the car before Lan Tijun even gets it parked. Then Ah Zhan and Ah Ying are plastered together, and Yan Li is smiling her sweet smile and saying, I'll let Mum and Dad know you're here, and disappearing into the house. Lan Tijun would rather not, but it would be a little rude to take their child away without speaking to them, so he helps Ah Ying put his backpack in the trunk. Tian Fengmian comes out of the house and to the car to shake Lan Tijun's hand and tell Ah Ying to have a good weekend, but Yu Ziyuan stands on the top step and stares down at them, her arms folded across her chest like butter won't melt in her mouth. Her children slip past her with wary glances, and Yin Li hugs Ah Ying goodbye while Ah Chang scowls and pouts, and then they're all getting into the car, Ah Ying and Ah Zhan sitting next to each other in the back seat, whispering in each other's ears, and Lan Tijun turning on an audiobook to keep him company during the long ride. Ah Ying is loud and boisterous until he sees Ah Zhan wince, and then he quiets his voice and his movements. He talks Ah Zhan into doing a dozen new things each day he's there, wearing different clothes, trying new foods, practicing a dance routine he saw in a children's show, singing silly songs he makes up on the fly. Every month, Lan Tijun gets off of work early on Friday, picks Ah Zhan up at his school, drives the 4 hours to pick up Ah Ying, and then drives him home. Every month, Ah Zhan smiles and giggles and whispers with Ah Ying, sleeps curled up around him like twins afraid of leaving the womb. On Sundays, they drive back, as late as the two boys can conspire to make it, and Ah Ying stands on the front steps of the Tian's house and watches them drive away. In the summer, Lan Tijun arranges for Ah Ying to come and stay for a month while the Tians are on an extended trip to China. Lan Tijun enrolls Ah Ying in the summer music program he'd been planning on sending Ah Zhan to. Music is one of Ah Zhan's special interests, and Lan Tijun has to watch him carefully and limit the amount of time he's allowed to play his qutin and guitar out of concern he might damage his fingertips. Ah Ying has never played an instrument before, and he's excited on the first day to pick out one of the traditional Chinese instruments available, finally settling on the duzi. A week into the program, Lan Tijun discovers that Ah Zhan refused to be separated from Ah Ying and insisted on being in the beginner's class so he could sit next to him. Lan Tijun comes into the living room from his study one Saturday and sees Ah Ying and Ah Zhan have found a box of Ah Zhan's mother's old things and are dressed in her clothes, her cocktail dresses, her long flowing scarves, her jewelry, her makeup. "You're so pretty," Ah Ying tells Ah Zhan, brushing his hair back from his face. "You're so pretty," Ah Zhan whispers back, his eyes wide and trained on Ah Ying's face. Lan Tijun hates Tian Feng Mian, but maybe he wasn't wrong. "You're both pretty," he says, and Ah Ying laughs. "But these are Ah Huan's and Ah Zhan's mother's things. It would be better to keep them safe until you're older." Ah Zhan looks sad and guilty, the way he always looks when he thinks he's broken a rule. Ah Ying sticks his bottom lip out. "If you want to wear dresses, I will buy you some," Lan Tijun tells them, "but you have to take these off and put them back into the box nicely." So they go to the store, and each of the boys picks out a sparkly princess dress to wear with matching costume jewelry. Pink for Ah Ying, blue for Ah Zhan. They run around the yard later, chasing fireflies, and Ah Huan takes pictures of them and sends them to Yan Li. When the month is over and Lan Tijun helps Ah Ying pack his bag, he gently suggests Ah Ying leave the dress and the costume jewelry behind. He doesn't know how Tian Feng Mian and Utsu Yuan would react to it, and all he can think about is how mean Utsu Yuan used to be. Ah Ying becomes obsessed with historical Chinese dramas and tries to get Ah Zhan to teach him to speak better Mandarin, though he often gives up halfway through a sentence and switches to English. They practice pretend sword fighting in the backyard with foam swords Ah Huan finds for them. They decide to grow their hair out, and Ah Huan gets Ah Zhan a bunch of cute hair clips when it starts getting in his eyes. Sometimes, when Ah Zhan is having a really bad day, or finds himself in the middle of a meltdown, Lan Tijun gets Ah Ying on the phone. Sometimes Ah Ying calls him up, and neither of them says anything, just stay on the line, listening to each other breathe. Ah Huan goes to college in the city that Ah Ying lives in, and Ah Ying brags that all of his school friends are jealous of his handsome Gaga who comes and takes him to dinner. Arjan stops off to his room and refuses to come out until Ah-Ying sits against the door for an hour, singing to him. Yan Li goes to college, and sometimes Lan Tijin overhears Ah-Ying talk about how hard it is now, without her there to diffuse the tension in the house. When he drops him off on Sunday evenings, Lan Tijin always tells him that he is always welcome in their house, and Ah-Ying says, "Yes, uncle," and smiles. When they are 13, Ah-Ying has a growth spurt and is suddenly half a foot taller than Arjan, all his baby fat suddenly given way to lanky limbs he wobbles on like a newborn colt, and Arjan mopes for the entire month it takes him to catch up. When they are 14, Lan Tijin catches them kissing, Arjan perched in Ah-Ying's lap. Ah-Ying supposedly stays in Ah-Huan's room now, but Lan Tijin knows that he often, if not always, sneaks into Arjan's room in the middle of the night. He sits them down and looks at them sternly until Ah-Ying starts to twitch and says, "I don't know what kind of sex education you received in school, but just in case it wasn't comprehensive, I think there are some things you need to know." And then proceeds to talk about all the things he learned the night before, staying awake and googling about what teenagers need to know about sex. He talks about sexuality, consent, making sure they're ready, and safe sex. "And, because I don't know if you would survive me telling you this," he adds, "you need to promise me you will read this material about anal sex before attempting it." He holds out the material he printed from the internet. Arjan and Ah-Ying are both bright red by this point. "Ah," Ah-Ying says, "Uncle, we were just playing around, we're not. But then Arjan catches his eye, and they spend a moment staring at each other, engaged in their mysterious nonverbal communication, until Ah-Ying finally turns an even deeper shade of red and accepts the material. "I think you two are too young to have sex," Lan Tijin says, "but I want you to be educated and safe if you're going to do it. I trust the two of you to make good decisions about this and to make choices that are not going to harm you." Maybe he should try to stop them, make Ah-Ying go back to his room when he catches him sneaking in the hallway, stop Ah-Ying from coming over, but he can't help but feel like it would do more harm than good. "Thank you, uncle," Ah-Ying says. "I promise we'll read it when we're ready. Can we be excused now?" And when Lan Tijin agrees, the boys grab each other's hands and run out of the room. Sometimes Lan Tijin really wishes he wasn't allergic to alcohol. When they are 16, Arjan wakes him in the middle of the night, tears dripping down his face, and he speeds most of the way between the cities, the roads empty and the night black. They find Ah-Ying sitting at a bus stop, shivering in his old winter cloak, his backpack by his feet, and Arjan wraps his arms around him and refuses to let go long enough for them to get into the car. Lan Tijin drives them back, glancing up in the rearview mirror to see the boys curled around each other like two halves of the same whole. In the morning, while Arjan is showering, Ah-Ying approaches him with a bright, fake smile and says, "Uncle, I won't be in your hair too long. I'm looking for a job." And Lan Tijin can't stop himself from snapping at him, "Ah-Ying, you will not be getting a job." Ah-Ying stares at him, down at him, now that he's so tall. "Uncle?" he asks. "What have I always told you, Ah-Ying?" Lan Tijin asks. "No running in the house," Ah-Ying says. "Don't talk with your mouth full, clean up after yourself, no loud music after 9 p.m, do your homework before you go play." Lan Tijin sighs. "You will always be welcome here," he says. "Always, unconditionally." "Don't you even want to know why they kicked me out?" Ah-Ying asks. Lan Tijin considers this for a moment. "Have you broken any laws?" he asks finally. Ah-Ying shakes his head. "Then I cannot imagine that whatever their excuse was, it merited their actions. You are a child in their care. They have a responsibility to provide for you." and to love you, he does not add. If they refuse to do that, I am happy to do so in their place. You are always welcome here.
I don't want to be a bother, Ai Ying begins. Lan Tijun has never wanted to strangle Tian Fengmian and U Ziyun so much, and that's saying a lot.
You are our family, Ai Ying, Lan Tijun says. You are never a bother.
Ai Ying laughs, even though his eyes are shining.
That can't be true, he says. Well, no, Lan Tijun agrees. You are sometimes a bother, but you are always welcome. You will always belong here.
And he leans forward and wraps his arms around the gangly boy and then calls Arjun's school to get Ai Ying registered there. It takes a whole week for Tian Fengmian to come pounding on Lan Tijun's door.
Lan Tijun, he says. How are you doing? Listen, I don't want to bother you, but is Wei Ying here? Suyun said he ran off, and I can't think of anywhere else.
He's here, Lan Tijun says stonily, his arms in front of his chest. He told me he was kicked out.
Ah, well, Tian Fengmian says, scratching his head. You know what a temper Suyun has.
In the middle of the night, Lan Tijun says. In the middle of the winter.
Hey, I wasn't even there, Tian Fengmian protests. I was on a business trip.
He's not going home with you, Lan Tijun says. He's not going to live in a house with someone who would do that.
Hey, old man, Tian Fengmian says. I have legal custody.
Do you really think it's in his best interest for him to live with her? Lan Tijun asks. Are you really okay with that? No one in this house would ever hurt him. We love him, and we will keep him safe.
You know he and your nephew are fucking, right? Tian Fengmian demands. How can you claim to keep him safe while you let them do that?
You really think two boys having sex is more dangerous than kicking a child out of a house in the middle of the night in the middle of winter? Lan Tijun asks.
It's your fault! Tian Fengmian shouts at him. I knew there was something wrong with you. What, did you teach them to become little faggots? Did they learn this from you?
Lan Tijun slams the door in his face, turns to see the boys, white-faced, standing behind him, holding tightly onto each other's hands. Outside, Tian Fengmian was screaming about how he was going to call the police.
Uncle, Ai Ying says, I should go home with him. It's just going to cause trouble for you. If he does what he threatens, calls the police and starts rumors about you.
No, Arjun says, tightening his grip until Ai Ying winces and carefully pulls away.
No, Lan Tijun agrees. I'm not going to let you go back to a house to live with them.
But he's right, Ai Ying exclaims. He's my guardian.
That doesn't mean he can force you to live somewhere you don't want to, Lan Tijun says. You're a child, not a slave. I will call my lawyer. If he decides to pursue a legal route, she will be able to advise us.
I'm too much trouble, Ai Ying says.
No, Arjun says.
No, Lan Tijun echoes him. You are a good child and you have brought happiness and joy to this house and we care deeply about you. You would not be too much trouble if you were 100 times more troublesome.
Ai Ying makes a sound and Lan Tijun is still trying to figure out what it means when Arjun wraps his arms around him and strokes his hair, making shushing noises in his ear.
Let's have pizza for dinner, Lan Tijun says.
Uncle,
Ai Ying cries, his voice garbled by tears.
It's a school night. You never allow pizza on school nights.
New rule, Lan Tijun says. Whenever someone says something homophobic to you, you get to have pizza.
Uncle, Ai Ying says, laughing a little. People say homophobic things to me every day. I don't think you want me to buy that much pizza.
Just today, then. Lan Tijun says, reminding himself to follow up with that later. Does he need to make a few calls to the school? Do they need to switch schools? That horrible hippie school up the road is probably a lot less homophobic. Lan Tijun hates hippies, but he hates homophobes a lot more. Ai Ying does his best to smile. Just today, he agrees.
When Arjun goes to his Kutin lesson the next day, having been talked out of skipping it by Lan Tijun,
Lan Tijin takes Ah Ying to the small storage closet and roots around until he finds the duffel bag Ah Ying had been forced to leave behind when he went to live with the Tians.
What is it? Ah Ying asks when Lan Tijin hands it to him.
Lan Tijin tells him.
It's stuff your parents bought for you, he says. I thought you probably wouldn't have very much.
Ah Ying looks down at the bag in his hands, then drops it so he can wipe his eyes with the back of a hand.
Uncle Tian saved some stuff for me when he dealt with my parents' stuff, Ah Ying tells him. But Ah Chang told me Aunt Yu threw most of it away when she kicked me out, and he saved what he could, but it wasn't much.
He throws his arms around Lan Tijin.
I can't believe you kept it for this long, he says.
Lan Tijin pats his back awkwardly. Qian Fengmian drops the threats after Lan Tijin and his lawyers have a long talk, but he forbids his children from talking to Ah Ying. Yan Li does anyway, not surprisingly, though she admits to Ah Ying that Ah Cheng feels like Ah Ying betrayed him. It's okay, Ah Ying says when Ah Zhang protests on his behalf. It can't be easy being the only kid left in the house. Yan Li comes to visit from university, bringing the box of stuff Ah Cheng had rescued for Ah Ying. They tried to get the things that were most important to you, she says. I'm sorry there's not more. Ah Ying wraps his arms around her and clings to her when she has to leave. I will always be your sister, she tells him, hugging him back, no matter what. And Ah Cheng will come around, I promise. Ah Cheng does come around by the time it's Ah Ying's birthday, and he lies to his parents and says he's going to a Halloween party, and instead makes the 4-hour drive just so he can see Wei Ying for a few hours before he has to leave so he can make curfew. Ah Ying pretends not to cry when he shows up with a scowl and an enormous cake, and Ah Zhan does his best to get along with him, even though Ah Cheng demonstrates his love for Ah Ying by insulting him and play-fighting with him, and Ah Zhan finds this offensive and appalling. And Lan Tijin may never forgive himself for allowing Tian Fengmian to take Ah Ying away in the first place, but he's glad Ah Ying has siblings that love him, no matter how bad they are at showing it. Too soon, the boys are graduating, impossibly tall and handsome in their graduation robes, Ah Ying grinning so wide he looks like his face might split open, and Ah Zhan smiling faintly. And then the house is empty. The boys move away for college, and Lan Tijin is left with the few teacups that survived Ah Ying, a few family portraits hanging on the wall, some ancient children's drawings still attached to the refrigerator, and once a week phone calls. He thought, when he tried to prepare himself for the day he dropped the boys off at college, that he might rebuild his orchid collection, or maybe start going to flea markets again, looking for rare old books. And he buys an orchid or two, spends a few Saturdays among the musky smell and dust of flea markets, but it's boring when compared to family dinners with the boys, Ah Zhan wrinkling his nose at the amount of chili Ah Ying poured on everything, Ah Zhan trying to trick Ah Ying into eating vegetables. It's boring when he thinks about them running through the house, Ah Ying laughing and Ah Zhan scolding him, when he remembers them as children, playing for hours with empty boxes and Legos, dancing in their princess dresses at twilight. He thinks of them when he hears children playing as he walks past the playgrounds, taking care not to stop and watch them for too long because he doesn't want anyone to think he's a creep, when he sees the food Ah Ying always used to try to convince him to buy in the grocery store, when he sees a flyer for an organization that provides support for LGBT plus youth. Hi, he says when a cheery young voice answers the phone. I was wondering if you had any need for volunteers. Later, much later, he'll hold Ah Yuan in his arms and will not succeed in keeping himself from crying. I only hope we can be good parents to him, Ah Ying will say, brushing the tips of his fingers over the cheeks of the drowsy toddler. I hope we can be as good as you are, Uncle. Later, he'll step forward and speak awkwardly into a microphone, looking up at his beautiful boys, Ajahn and Ah Ying in their wedding suits, Ah Han smiling just as proudly from the family table. "The best things that ever happened to me," he'll say, "were brought to my doorstep in the middle of the night by women with palms." The end. Reader's notes. So I have a huge soft spot for good uncle Lan Tishan, I think is the official AO3 tag, because there is something about a man who is crotchety and grumpy and like, and was probably an old man deep inside when he was like an actual toddler, and it just suddenly has to deal with like these two children and tries his best and doesn't always succeed, but, you know, tries his very best and loves with, like, the entirety of his heart. And that is very, very important to me. And this fic is just so absolutely lovely about him being, like, a good parent, even though, like, he thinks he's not doing a good job. But we as the audience, and I'm sure the characters, his kids in this one, can see what an excellent job he's doing. And, like, such a good job, and just so much, so supportive of his kids, and, you know, just everything's so super wonderful, and I really love it. It's, like, such a feel-good fic for when you want to read about, like, super supportive parents, which there is, to be honest, not much of in the canon, so to speak, and it's just lovely to read this fic about him being, like, so supportive of all these kids that come into his life. And it's just this lovely comfort fic that I really have enjoyed reading quite a few times. But yeah, so I really love this fic. It's just, it's such a wonderful, like, good uncle and, like, supportive, you know, being supportive of your, like, neurodivergent and queer kids. And it's just absolutely lovely.